see it. All right, here we go. I'm Dan, and I'm an alcoholic. And welcome to the Fellowship of the Spirit West Conference 2008. And I don't see any committee members here in the room, but if they were here, I'd thank them for having me, allowing me to do this. The traditions aren't usually the most exciting thing to listen to, so I certainly don't intend to do the things that I normally have heard. And generally what happens is when people talk about traditions, even in the 12 and 12, there's so many stories wrapped around it, it's hard to really kind of like get a grasp of what are they really saying here. And what I found is it's kind of like, just like if you're doing the 12 steps and listening to someone talk about the 12 steps, you're not going to get the same experience listening to someone else talk about their 12 steps as if you were to do them yourself. So what I've realized over the years was that unless I can attach my personal experience to what they're saying, then I'm not going to really grasp it at a deep level. So I've passed out some pages. It's a questionnaire. I call it the 12 Traditions Checklist. And if you're listening to this and you don't have it, you can actually download it off of thejwalker.com if you want to get one of these checklists. And where the checklist comes from is basically my home group has done group inventories on a regular basis throughout the years. And one of the things that's suggested for a group inventory is to align your group's actions and with what AA's 12 traditions are, to see if you're breaking any of the 12 traditions. So going over that and putting together the format, I realized that, you know, it was really kind of hard to just read the traditions as they were and for me to grasp it. So I kind of dug in, just went through the 12 and 12 and through the long form of the big book and the short form of 12 traditions in the big book. Tried to strip away all the stories and look at her, you know, what's the meat of this? What is he really saying here? And I'm sure that it's not perfect, and I'm sure that it could have been more elaborate. But I knew that I needed to start at a simpler level to really kind of understand it, and I could add to it from there. So if some of this seems like it's too simplistic on the checklist, you know, I agree with that. You know, there's probably a lot more. But at the same time, what I saw is that if you start at a simpler level, you can start to get a grasp of what it's saying and build on it a lot easier. One of the things that was a byproduct of creating this list was that I started to look at my own experience with what it's saying. And based on that, attaching my own experience to each tradition and how it was broken, either in my group or around my group, I had a personal experience with what it means, and I kind of felt like I understood it at a deeper level than what I had ever... how I had ever understood it before. So that's where this comes from, and that's sort of the basis for what I'm going to try to do here, is talk more about some of my experience with the traditions. If I have any, I don't have any particular experience with all the traditions because we didn't necessarily break all of them in my home group, right? but what I would like to do is start off with a little bit of history. And that was early on, before the traditions, AA didn't have many guidelines, didn't have any guidelines, and talks about it in the forewords in the big book, how they were experiencing some really serious growing pains early on. There was no guidelines, no rules, no no laws, no nothing to really designate what was happening. So there was a lot of fighting over how things should get done, what was right, what was wrong, who should be allowed into Alcoholics Anonymous, should we charge for it? Right? There's all kinds of stories of people. This guy in Florida, he was charging for Alcoholics Anonymous, and it pissed some other people off. So they complained to the office, right? The home office. He said, "Hey, Bill, this guy out here in Florida is charging for Alcoholics Anonymous." And he said, "Really?" So Bill was going to be in Florida, so he went down to go talk to the guy. The guy was pretty open about it. There was nothing, there was no traditions at the time, right? Right? He was okay. You can do what you want. He says, "Yeah, I'm charging for it. You know what I found, Bill? I found that people take this thing a lot more seriously if they have to pay for it." And he says, "Besides, we're sending you guys all the money." Well, obviously Bill liked that idea because they were pretty short of money. Right? But there was plenty of stories that caused conflict. I mean, in that guy's area in Florida, certainly there was people that thought it was a good idea of charging for this thing. You know, and there was all those that thought it was absolutely the wrong thing to do. Right? And that same conflict was going on in all different directions. Nobody knew what was right or what was wrong. Everybody had an opinion. Right? Did you know an alcoholic to not have one? Right? So there was stories of actual fist fights over what was right and what was wrong in Alcoholics Anonymous. Anyway, during this time of all this turmoil, somebody walks up to Bill and he says, "You know, Bill, this is starting to look a lot like the Washingtonians." Now, Bill had never really heard of the Washingtonians, so he thought he would check it out, see why this guy says that. You know, what was the Washingtonians about? And the Washingtonians were actually started by six drunks in a bar. Their idea was they were just going to meet to try to help each other stay sober. Well, it worked so well that their fellowship actually grew a lot faster than Alcoholics Anonymous. But it wasn't only limited to alcoholics. They thought that their solution was working so well that they could help anybody and with anything. And it was such a profound movement and impacting the community so much. Even Abraham Lincoln mentions it in one of his talks. He talked about the Washingtonians. But the Washingtonians, even though it started off just for alcoholics, they were also trying to help addicts. There was different drugs at the time, not what we have now. There was different types, but there was addicts. there was people with different kinds of other struggles, and there was even people attracted to the group that had political motivations. Right? There was abolitionists, people that were against slavery. If you're not familiar with the word, there was, all different kinds of causes. So what Bill started to see was what originally was this primary focus in the beginning when it was small became this big movement that didn't really have any particular focus. Now, the reason that it was so curious to Bill was because for, I think it was something like 15 years, it went great guns, growing and growing and growing, and then all of a sudden, they just disappeared off the face of the earth. I mean, you could find traces of them, but it just kind of fizzled out, it died. And that wasn't Bill's only experience with problems in situations that have influenced Alcoholics Anonymous. There was also the Oxford group, which obviously had a lot of exposure to. The Oxford group was greatly damaged by Buchman's attempts to help the world by converting Hitler into Christianity. He went there to try to do some stuff to try to talk to Hitler. And quickly was branded a Nazi sympathizer. And we had gone through this period of time that obviously that wasn't something that was a popular thing. People were getting blacklisted in all different directions as a result of associating with that particular direction and other situations, other political situations. Anyway, this all kind of added up to Bill realizing is that there was things that we could do that could affect Alcoholics Anonymous life expectancy. Right? During that time, the office was sort of really kind of a clearinghouse for problems. Anything that came up and questions that they had about Alcoholics Anonymous would filter through this office. They had a woman working there named Ruth Hawk. She wasn't an alcoholic, but she was working in the office, and she was noted as being very great at filing. Didn't want to use the other word. Really great at filing these requests for information that were coming in, for the questions that were coming in, the problems that were coming in. She'd file them into categories. Right? So through this organization, it started to develop obvious directions of problems. Right? And Bill was developing these ideas that there had to be some sort of guidelines. And Bill was the kind of person, once he got something in his head, he was just, you couldn't talk to him about anything else. On a weekend, there'd be 40 people would wander in just to sit down and have coffee and talk. And it's noted in Pass It On how he would, the conversation would immediately go to the traditions, and he'd start bouncing his ideas off various people to try to formulate people's responses to his ideas, to mold these ideas about these guidelines. And one of the things obviously was a question of what would we call these guidelines, because alcoholics certainly didn't want laws or rules or right. But what had happened was there were certain things that became traditional responses to certain things, and it did occur to Bill that maybe the idea of traditions, calling them traditions, would be it wasn't the first idea. He had a few different names for it, but traditions obviously is what stuck. And it seemed to fit well because there was obviously some traditional ways to approach things by that time. One of the things that he really faced was a lot of resistance to the idea of this, or to the acceptance of this, because this, the 12 traditions was written way before it was actually put into place as something we're going to really stick with. Some people liked the idea, some people absolutely didn't want any kind of control on Alcoholics Anonymous. But ultimately, it won out because they realized that in order for this thing to outlive, or to not die, I should say, we needed to have some guidelines. Right? And with that, I'm going to start by, I'm going to read a tradition. I'm going to read the short form, and then I'm going to read the long form. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about it, and then propose a question that you don't necessarily need to answer, but it's going to be the one that's on the sheet here for consideration. Right? But before I go into that, I want to start at the 12th tradition, where it talks about anonymity being the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles of Alcoholics Anonymous, before individual personalities. So here it says that this is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions. So one of the questions that needs to come into this situation is, how is anonymity the spiritual foundation of step one, and reminding me to place principles of AA before my personality or your personality? Yeah. That's a great question for each one of these traditions. Yeah. tradition one is, or common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. The long form says, each member of Alcoholics Anonymous is but a small part of a great whole. AA must continue to live where most of us will surely die. Hence, the common welfare comes first. That's AA as a whole comes first. But the individual welfare follows close afterwards. So here what it's saying to me is that the common welfare of AA as a whole comes first. Right? The group is obviously real important and should come second, and the individual follows closely after. Right? But in perspective here, it's last. Right? The individual is not the most important to the survival of Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole. I'm not saying that the individual is not important. Right? What I'm saying is there is a perspective that I've heard over and over in Alcoholics Anonymous, and some of it is just parroted and not given, because it's not too much thought is given to it, and some of it is just overlooked because you've got two things that are really common. You've got the big personalities that pretty much run the room, right? And then you got the newcomers. And on the other side of that spectrum is you hear people say, well, the newcomer is the most important person in the room, right? That's not what the tradition is saying. It says AA comes first, the group comes second, right? And the individual follows afterwards. If there is no group, if there is no AA, there is no group of AA. If there is no group of AA, there is no place for the individuals to go. Right? Two things I've seen happen. One, I've obviously seen newcomers run a meeting, completely ignoring the format, making the meeting about them. Right? Because if that wasn't happening, then the fact that they were there would not necessarily be impacting the group. What I'm talking about is a group that will allow an individual to override its format, its group, the format that the group decided on having. Sometimes it's just questioning, and sometimes it's disruption. Right? There's plenty of people that are so resentful that it doesn't seem to be working for them. They are more than happy to be rude in a meeting, disruptive. You know, Chris's group had a situation we talked about just a few weeks ago, where somebody was disruptive in the meeting, and you know, you got to ask, you know, is this person, even though they're new, scaring some of the other new people in the group, or scaring away some of the people that don't want to deal with a newcomer's meeting that could be helpful to other newcomers? So when an individual is so disruptive that it's damaging a group, right? Does the group have to put up with that? Some individual damaging the attractiveness of a meeting? I mean, one group is not, you might say, well, one group's not that big of a deal, right? But I'm sure that this is happening all over town. There's individuals in a lot of different meetings affecting the way the groups are looking to other new people coming into the room, and other people that aren't necessarily new, but don't necessarily, maybe they're just looking for a new group to come to. Anyway, the point is, that isn't what's best suited for the common welfare of Alcoholics Anonymous. Right? So, as far as what should be done about it, I don't think that this necessarily addresses what should be done about it. This just sheds light on a situation, right? That the individual knew, or old, if they're going against what's best for the group, then it should be addressed. It should be acknowledged that the anonymity in the 12th tradition comes into play there. Anonymity being the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, reminding us to place the principles of AA first, and the personalities after that, before the personalities of the individual. AA survival is more important. than an individual that doesn't know how to behave, right? So what do you do about it? What it says in the second tradition, in the short form, it says, for our group's purposes, but one ultimate authority, loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. In the long form, it says, for our group's purpose, there's but one ultimate authority, loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Now, the long form is actually shorter than the short form in this case. But ultimately what it's saying is we need to bring it to the group, and whatever the group decides is ultimately what the solution is going to, where the solution is going to come from. Does that mean we throw this disruptive person out? No, not if the group as a whole decides we're going to let this meeting be a group of disruptive people. They might, as a group, decide they don't want to throw the person out. On the other hand, right, maybe the group finds it unattractive or intolerable, and as a group, that can decide to ask somebody not to show up. Right? It's a group decision. You know, God has spoken through the group. So, obviously, when you get an issue like that, you're going to have all kinds of conflict from the members of the group. How can we throw someone out? You know, he's an alcoholic. That's all that matters, right? You just right. So there is going to be conflict. So I think where tradition 12 comes into this is, you know, here in where it comes to a group conscience, is I have to surrender to the conscience of the group, understanding that, you know, my desires or my needs here, you know, if the majority says that it's too disruptive for them, then I need to listen to that. But then we talked about, the other thing I want to say about group conscience is, if you don't have one, then what you have is people complaining about it in the parking lot. You got two people over there, you got four people over there, you got some other people at the coffee shop, some other people that are calling each other on the phone, right? And nothing can get done because there's no group conscience. Right? There is no solution. So no group conscience, really stands in the way of the traditions effectively working in a group. Right? Even in our group inventories, we're double checking what the group conscience is doing, right? And ultimately, what that's about is bringing more things to the group conscience. But communication amongst the group and turning to God for the solution, ultimately, as heard through the combined conscience of the group. So I mentioned some people would say, "How can you throw him out? He's alcoholic." The only desire for the only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking, right? How many times do you hear that? Right? But then again, how many times do you hear it as an excuse to stay in a fellowship that you may not necessarily have the same problem? Right? Some people say, "I can be here even though I didn't drink because I have a desire to stop drinking." So if you look at the other literature, it says it refers to things like someone with a drinking problem that has a desire to stop drinking. Right. It got kind of thrown out of context here, but let me read the traditions first. The short form is, the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. The long form is, our membership ought to include all who suffer from alcoholism. Hence, we may refuse none who wish to recover. Nor ought AA membership ever depend upon money or conformity. Any two or three alcoholics gathered together for sobriety may call themselves an AA group, provided that as a group they have no other affiliation. This is especially a big issue in the meetings that I go to because they're closed meetings for Alcoholics Anonymous. So there's people all the time that don't want to I don't know if I should say it like this, say the magic word. Right? Even if they know it's a closed meeting for Alcoholics Anonymous, right? So it's sort of taken as a challenge in some groups. If you don't want to say you're an alcoholic, knowing that it's a closed meeting for Alcoholics Anonymous, then they get upset that they get challenged, right? And then that, them getting upset by that starts to upset the other people that don't know why you're stopping a meeting to stand up for a format that the group's decided on. But really, can you do anything but stand up for the group's format? Right? The group decided on a particular format. They decided to have a closed meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. If someone wants to pull something out of context, then, again, that's like the lack of understanding of what the traditions are about. And sometimes you have to look at the history of where the traditions came from. You know, in the beginning, it was, Bill was a stock speculator, right? And he went and he talked to a prominent doctor. And they got together and they talked to a big shot attorney, right? So what kind of people do you think they invited into their house for Alcoholics Anonymous? Right? They stopped picking up people out of the alleys. So as it grew, though, it certainly got more open. But there were still a lot of things going on back in those days. Women hadn't won the fight over equality, right? Now I think it went way the other direction, but whoa. Did I say my name was Ron? Was Ron? No. Oh, damn.
Speak louder to the mic.
No, but there was people that didn't want women in Alcoholics Anonymous. They thought Alcoholics Anonymous was not for women. But then what happened is one of the first people that tried really hard to get in, who failed to get in, died due to her drinking, which impacted them greatly, because it's like they realized that that decision was life-threatening to some people. And there was other things going on back then. There was a lot of segregation between whites and blacks. And that was really big back in early on. And there was too much conflict, because even if they would allow somebody to come in, if they came in through the front door, there could be other people that had nothing to do with Alcoholics Anonymous come burn the building down because they were being flexible, right? Because there was a lot of inflexibility that direction. So there was a lot of debate over it, what was right, what was wrong. But what was agreed is what was right was to help them get started. And because, again, it goes back to this. You know, they're alcoholics and they need help. One of the questions was posed is should any man be excluded from our solution? And the answer was no. So they started to look at how they could do it. And there was a group called the Manhattan Group at the 41st Street Clubhouse. And what they did is they let a couple representatives of that of their community, of the black community, come into the meeting long enough so that they could understand what had to happen for them to go back into their community to start doing their own meetings so that they could help themselves. One of those guys was actually named Jim S., and he was a black physician. And a lot of you may not know this, but Jim's story in the book, that's Jim S. Okay. So I thought that was some interesting information, interesting history. Okay. So the only requirement for membership being a desire to stop drinking has nothing to do with me qualifying somewhere to belong. It's about how you look at me as a group, is that I'm a person that has a drinking problem, and no matter what my race, my religion, right, my financial status is, right, even if I don't take a shower or don't dress right for you, right, the only requirement for membership to Alcoholics Anonymous is that I be an alcoholic that needs help. That is the basis for that tradition. Now with that, it leads right into the, oh, I'm sorry, the 12th, anonymity being the spiritual foundation of that tradition, again, I think is that I acknowledge that even though I might not like someone that walks through the door, they need help. Right? And that my judgment on whether they should be here or not be here has nothing to do with whether they should be or not be here. That if they come in, sit down, and go along with the rest of the group's format, right, that, and that they're alcoholic, that's the only requirement. So the fourth tradition. The short form is each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. And then the long tradition, the long version of the fourth tradition is, with respect to its own affairs, each AA group should be responsible to no other authority than its own conscience. But when its plan concerns the welfare of neighboring groups, also those groups ought to be consulted. And no group, regional committee, or individual should ever take any action that might greatly affect AA as a whole without conferring with the trustees of the General Service Board on such issues or common welfare is paramount. Which basically means a group can do almost anything it chooses to do, providing it doesn't impact Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole. Certainly there's other things that need to, I mean, when I say can do almost anything, you know, there's people that, I'm sorry, there's groups that can vote on reading particular literature, right, that isn't AA approved. Group can do it. There's groups that have done, like the Thiebaud Papers, it's not AA literature. Right? It's actually owned by the Hazleton, by Hazleton Hospital. Some groups can decide to do that. It's okay. Right? But there's probably right ways and wrong ways to approach it. Anything that will affect AA as a whole needs to be examined. Right? And if you're not sure what they're saying is, hey, you know, give us a call and ask. And let us look in, let's talk about it. Some groups can be so rigid, right, in any direction. Like some groups say you have to go to the yard on Saturdays, or other groups will say if you're not doing the steps this way, you're not doing it right. Right? Other groups, that's okay. If the conscience of the group wants to keep them, wants to hang on to that, that those ideas. But as long as the common welfare of Alcoholics Anonymous does not get affected, you know, and there is times when that can greatly affect the common welfare of Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole. Especially when those things imply things. Like, I've had people tell me that they don't want to go to Alcoholics Anonymous because they read the Bible there. Right? And I talk to them, and it turns out that they've only been to one Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and they happen to have walked into a group that's the book they read. They call themselves Alcoholics Anonymous, but they read the Bible. Now, that's no judgment on my part on the Bible. I'm just saying what I heard. Right? So certainly there's times when certain things should be in the format, saying this is not AA literature, but our group leans this direction. Right? So I think just being responsible is important here. And again, these are questions that should come up in a group conscience. Right? Are we affecting? And the question would be, does our group do anything that does not conform to AA principles and affects other groups or AA as a whole? Right, that's the question on this checklist. Right. fifth tradition is that each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. And the long tradition is each Alcoholics Anonymous group ought to be a spiritual entity having but one primary purpose, that of carrying its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. So certainly there's a couple things here that need to be figured out. One of them is what, when it says its message, what's the group's message? You know, people have different ideas of what being of maximum help to alcoholics looks like. Certainly, this is a big book conference. A lot of people here will say, well, our responsibility is to show them what's in the big book. That's not necessarily everybody's opinion in Alcoholics Anonymous. So there's people that would say, well, how can there be anything but that? And I think Alcoholics Anonymous has created this really big net. Not everybody that comes in here wants to be thrown into a situation that's very rigid. Some people need to be eased in it. Some people need life to bring them to the point where they want to do more. You've got all kinds of groups with all kinds of formats. And in Los Angeles, where I live, you have a choice which direction to go. Certainly, I have firm ideas of what the right way is. I found the perfect path, but what I got to realize is it's the perfect path for me. Not everybody wants to dig into the big book like I like to. Not everybody wants to pick it apart. There's other meetings they can go to. And it's about being maximum service to people. Sometimes maximum service can be being as most effective as I think effective is supposed to look like, but then what about the other person who thinks maximum effectiveness is getting him to go to a lot of meetings and take a lot of commitments? Right? Who am I to judge that? What's right for you or for them? Certainly, if they come to me and ask me for help, I'll steer them towards the big book. But still, my home group's primary purpose was to carry the message out of the big book, to help people recover through that, through the 12-step process outlined in our book. And that's what my home group, as a group, focuses on and makes most important. So the question here on the checklist is, does our group do anything that conflicts with carrying the AA message to alcoholics who want a way out from their drinking problem? You know, the only thing I can help them with is my experience, right? My experience drinking and my experience with the solution. I have no judgment as far as medical situations. I shouldn't say I have no judgment. I don't give advice based on those on anything medical. So it's illegal in the state of California to practice medicine without a license. But what I do is, when someone comes to me, the only thing that I tell them is we're going to go through the big book. And that's not going to cost them a penny, right? Because what I do is something that I do out of love and service. Right? So, tradition 6. An AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend its AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Long form is, problems of money, property, and authority may easily divert us from our primary purpose. I'm sorry, primary spiritual aim. We think, therefore, that any considerable property of genuine use to AA should be separately incorporated and managed, thus dividing the material from the spiritual. An AA group as such ought never go into business, secondary aids to AA, such as clubs or hospitals which require much property or administration, ought to be incorporated and so set apart that, if necessary, they can be freely discarded by the groups. Hence, such facilities ought not be used, should not use the AA name, like Alano clubs. Right? They come up with their own names. Their management should be the sole responsibility of those people who financially support them. The AA clubs, AA managers, are usually preferred, but hospitals as well as other places of recuperation ought to be well outside AA and medically supervised. While an AA group may cooperate with anyone, such cooperation ought never go as far as affiliation or endorsement, actual or implied. In an AA group can bind itself to no one. One of the things that stand out to me here is a story that I heard. It was a story actually from history, where a bunch of people decided they had this really elaborate idea that they were going to build this, they were going to get this property, and it was going to be this just enormous recovery facility. At the bottom, they were going to have meeting rooms. Above that, they were going to have medical offices, and above that, they were going to have places for people that were homeless and detoxing to do their thing. And they ran around the community selling them on the idea that, you know, look at how much good this is going to be. And, you know, so they got investors for this place, right? They had really good motives in wanting to help all these people and setting up this big recovery facility, but they forgot, they obviously weren't great businessmen because they forgot one thing, is that the people that they wanted to help didn't have any money. So they had people that were interested in their services, but there wasn't enough money to pay back the investors or to keep the thing running. The place closed down, and all these investors from around the town that weren't alcoholics lost money. And the sign on the door was Alcoholics Anonymous. Right? So, in their eyes, Alcoholics Anonymous kind of stuck them in a bad business deal. Right? There was other situations. There was many situations, but let's roll it forward more currently to, you know, how many sober livings or recovery facilities would love to be able to stick up the sign above their driveway saying, Alcoholics Anonymous, blah, 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 right? But then there, whether or not that facility, Alcoholics Anonymous would be judged by the success of that facility and the effectiveness of that facility. Any problems, any lawsuits, anything that came towards their direction, Alcoholics Anonymous would be, if Alcoholics Anonymous' name was connected with them, they'd be pulled in too. A lot of these conventions that you go to are not Alcoholics Anonymous. They're called things like the Roundup, and you know, there's other names. Some things are sponsored by Alcoholics Anonymous, but a lot, probably most of them aren't. Right? And that creates a separation of liability for Alcoholics Anonymous, both for the lack of effectiveness of any particular situation, any liabilities from if someone trips in a hallway and, you know, they're not going to be able to come after Alcoholics Anonymous. Now they'll call up Alcoholics Anonymous and, hey, I was at that Roundup in Palm Springs and I fell down the stairs. I'm, you know, and it's like, well, you need to contact those people. We have nothing to do with that. Okay. Or the fact that if someone goes out and someone in the public eye, basketball player, an actor, whatever, pop star, goes to some rehab, right? And she happens to mention the 12 steps, or maybe even she mentions AA, right? And then, and naturally, there'll be some press conference, and they'll be going, you know, everything's going to be fine now. I'm doing this, this, and this. I'm in this recovery home. I've got my 12-step program going. Right? And then next week, she's out again and back in jail, and then back in another rehab. So what do the reporters do? They call Alcoholics Anonymous and say, so, you know, what do you have to say about this? She went to AA, and she's not getting better. And what is Alcoholics Anonymous going to say? We know nothing about her recovery home. You're going to have to call them and find out what they do there. It's nothing to do with us. Right? Because that level of separation separates us from liability, from bad press, from the things that are going to darken the name of Alcoholics Anonymous. Right? Tradition 7. The AA groups themselves ought to be fully supported by the voluntary contributions. Oh, wait, let me read the question here. Here's a good question to sit in with you, to contemplate about your group and the groups around you, to try to see if you see anywhere that this is done. But does anything we do affiliate, endorse, or bind our group actual or implied to any related facility or outside enterprise? Okay, back to the short form of Tradition 7. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. The long form of Tradition 7 is, the AA groups themselves ought to be fully supported by the voluntary contributions of their own members. We think that each group should soon achieve this ideal, that any public solicitation of funds using the name of Alcoholics Anonymous is highly dangerous, whether by groups, clubs, hospitals, or other outside agencies, that acceptance of large gifts from any source or contributions carrying any obligation, whatever, remember the word obligation, whatever, because I'm going to go back to that, is unwise. Then, too, we view with much concern those AA treasuries which continue beyond prudent reserves to accumulate funds for no stated AA purpose. Experience has often warned us that nothing can so surely destroy our spiritual heritage as futile disputes over property, money, and prestige. They saw that there was a great benefit to separate the material from the spiritual. When an AA group, if an AA group accumulates too much money, much more money than it needs, then the debate comes up as, what are we going to do with it? The other issue here was about the obligation of accepting funds from outside sources. If Alcoholics Anonymous had gotten dependent on funds from outside sources, what happens when if we were, say, like, dependent on a hospital program, you know, early on Bill was offered a whole wing at a hospital. They said, come on, Bill, we'll give you this whole wing. You can do whatever you want here. And I will just put up the Alcoholics Anonymous wing of the hospital. One of the things that they were trying to avoid is, what they realized they had to avoid is depending on anybody, any outside entity, for their survival. One of the reasons being is what if the hospital said, you know, we think that your program would be much more effective if you did it this way, right? And if you're dependent on that entity, right, they're going to carry weight. If somebody outside of Alcoholics Anonymous started dumping a lot of money into Alcoholics Anonymous, and Alcoholics Anonymous became dependent on that income, right? And then one day they turned around and said, you know, I think you need to take that word God out of the big book, right? Right? And certainly it would bother a lot of people to hear that, but it could happen, right? But the problem is that when you're dependent on somebody for money, right, their opinions are going to matter whether you like it or not. Because if they pull the funds, then, you know, what are you going to do? So they saw early on that the best approach for Alcoholics Anonymous is to stay dependent on itself, and to produce what it needed on its own. And, you know, to maintain some control in that fashion of the direction of Alcoholics Anonymous without outside influences. No non-alcoholic entity is going to steer Alcoholics Anonymous out of control of that needed support. So this question on the checklist for Tradition 7 is, does the group receive donations from anyone other than an AA member? Tradition 8, the short form. Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Okay, and the long form is, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional. We define professionalism as the occupation of counseling alcoholics for fees or hire. That would be a nice job, wouldn't it? But we may employ alcoholics where they are going to perform those services for which we might otherwise have to engage at non-alcoholics. Such special services may be well recompensed. But for usual AA 12-step work, there is never... Our usual AA 12-step work is never to be paid for. Certainly it would be nice to be able to like get a little office on a main street and put up the names, you know, Dan's 12-step counseling. Charge a lot of money for it. I'd come into meetings and pass out cards. Right? Yeah, you can go to that guy over there, but, you know, I know I'm more expensive, but you probably won't get the same 12-step work that I can give you. But what happens with that is it goes against really what they found early on is that you just become another doctor, another counselor, another therapist, another person trying to, and you just kind of get categorized with all the rest of them. Anybody that's worked with a lot of people have to have experienced what happens to somebody else when they realize you're doing what you're doing without being compensated for it financially. Right? There is a certain response to that spiritual act, right? That selfless act, and you would not be able to reproduce that in a situation like in a professional situation, right? Because it no longer becomes a spiritual practice; it becomes a job. What someone does for a living, right? And it changes the situation. So the checklist here says, are there any fees besides meeting expenses being charged for 12-step work, i.e. fellowship sponsoring, step work, counseling? So I look around my group and I look around other groups around me. I've actually known people that we're charging for 12-step work. It's done. It's not common because it's frowned upon. And it brings up a lot of questions, right? You got a lot of things going on these days that are popular. And one of the things that came up in our group when we were going through the traditions was, what about sober coaching? Right? Because these people are paid to take people to meetings and just sit with them and do this. You know, and what really came out of that was, that's not AA. Right? That's basically babysitting. Right? It's not Alcoholics Anonymous. And even they'll tell you that too. So just because somebody is getting paid for 12-step work, like what about someone that works at a recovery place? I've heard people say that they don't want to talk about 12-step stuff with their clients because they're not supposed to get paid and talk about it. And I think you got to understand that just because you work at a rehab doesn't mean you can't talk to someone about 12-step work. Because talking to someone about 12-step work is not sponsoring them or taking them through the steps. It's just answering questions. 12-step work, specifically to me, is I define it as me working with another alcoholic, sitting with them, taking them through this process, right? The process of the 12 steps. And sponsorship or 12-step work, you know, is something of it is what it is. It's just that. It's not all this other stuff.
Dan?
Yeah.
Just one comment. I do a workshop at the state penitentiary where I live,
mm-hmm.
and one of the guys in there who had been in AA before asked this question. He said, I had a sponsor, and the sponsor had me come over to his house and work and do all this stuff. I was required mm-hmm. to do all this stuff. He didn't pay me for it. On and on and on. And we, the guys that were there assured him that that isn't typical, but that sometimes happens, but that goes basically against the traditions, that it's supposed to be for free or for fun, and there's no, you understand what I'm saying? I mean, that's not monetary per se, but kind of is in the same,
Yeah. Bill himself said that the tradition should be worn like a loose coat. Right? That ultimately, each situation should be looked at as what is the right thing to do? What is the spiritual thing to do? Some situations, you can be helpful. Some situations pay, but doesn't mean you have to limit your effectiveness. Right? Doesn't mean you have to hold back. Some situations, some people couldn't get into the prisons unless they're paid employees that are their job is to go in and talk to counsel these people. Right. Every situation needs, I don't think that there's any absolutes here.
But you understand what I'm talking about. It's like sponsors taking advantage of their position as a sponsor to get freebies from their sponsees. That's what this guy was complaining about.
Right.
That he had seen that when he was, outside. That was his experience of Alcoholics Anonymous that turned him off.
Okay, I might have missed something then in what you said.
He had been a sponsee.
Right, he'd been a sponsee.
Before he went to prison.
Right.
And the sponsor had required him to, help him move his house or do various things for him,
Right.
If I'm going to sponsor you, you'll come do this and you'll do that.
All right.
Yeah.
If you wash my car, I'll sponsor you.
Yeah, exactly.
Every Friday. I wish I could pull that off, but I can't. Again, you hear all kinds of stories. I guess the question, I wouldn't agree with it. I'm not agreeing with it, but if I had to argue against it, is somebody helping me move sponsoring 12-step work? That would be, I guess, the question that comes to my mind. Is asking someone to help me move? And if there was a condition based on that, if you don't do this, I'm not going to sponsor you, then, again, you can't really have anybody arrested for that. The person has to take responsibility for his own spiritual path and say, something doesn't look right here. This doesn't align with Alcoholics Anonymous's traditions to me, and I better find someone else.
What if the group conscience says that, and that group is a representative of Alcoholics Anonymous and claims themselves to be an Alcoholics Anonymous group and says that if you're a part of that group, this is what you have to do?
If it becomes a part of the group, ideals.
Yeah.
Amen.
Well, I think my argument, if I was in the group, would be each group is autonomous. Right, that each group is autonomous and can do whatever, and whatever the group decides is what the group says. Because some people believe that labor is that manual labor can be spiritual. So there's different ways to argue it. There's different ways to argue it.
But doesn't that adversely affect Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole?
There's plenty of groups that have a lot of rules to, as far as the groups go. Can't have facial hair, have to wear suits to commitments, show up certain places and do certain things. You know what? Some people love that. So who am I to pass a judgment on what that group decides they want to do as a group? Alcoholics Anonymous is that flexible. Now, I didn't, they told me they wanted me to shave my mustache, and I says, I'm not going to have anything to do with this group. That's all it took for me. And I didn't even get as far as moving people's houses or washing cars. I just, but as a group can decide what they want to do. Well, I'm not saying I agree with it. I'm not saying I agree with it, but they think, the group I'm thinking of, thinks that that's part of recovery. They also, as the particular group I'm thinking of also as a whole doesn't necessarily focus on the big book. Part people in the group do, but as a whole they don't. So that is their program. I don't agree with it, but that doesn't matter. It's you know, again, Alcoholics Anonymous has created a really big net. And some people like to be kept busy. And some people benefit from it. You know, so who am I to pass judgment on what someone else wants to do or needs? And if they come to me and ask me what I think they should do, then I'm 100% honest. You know, it's the law of spiritual consent. Right? You ask me what I think you should do, I'll tell you. That could be a long conversation. We probably would run out of time. And I think ultimately, if you go back to to tradition 12, right? I think that spiritually, I have to allow other people to have the program that they want and the AA they want, right? Whether I agree with it or not, because their format, hopefully, was agreed on by the mass, or you know, it's a group conscience to go along with this. Right? So I need to let them have their AA.
Isn't that the part in the book where it says that we're a God who gave us a brain to use?
I think I'll keep my response to myself.
Moving on.
Okay. Tradition 9, short form. AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible for those they serve. The long form is, each AA group needs the least possible organization. Rotating leadership is the best. The small group may elect its secretary, the large group its rotating committee, and the groups of a large metropolitan area their central or intergroup committee, which often employs a full-time secretary. The trustees of the General Service Board are, in effect, or AA General Services Committee. They are the custodians of our AA tradition and the receivers of the voluntary AA contributions by which we maintain our AA General Service office at New York. They are authorized by the groups to handle or overall public relations and they guarantee the integrity of our principal newspaper, the AA Grapevine. All such representations are to be guided in the spirit of service, for true leaders in AA are but trusted and experienced servants of the whole. They derive no real authority from their titles. They do not govern. Universal respect is the key to their usefulness. So, talks about the importance of rotating leadership. And it talks about all these other different commitments. Some of them are actually, some of them certainly, there's plenty of things in Alcoholics Anonymous that people get paid for doing, but some jobs require the same person working on the same job every week. Those people have to eat. So some jobs deserve that they get paid for. Somebody in charge of bookkeeping is not doing 12-step work. All right? They're doing bookkeeping, and they're doing it 40 hours a week, whatever amount of weeks a year, you know, and they need to get paid. It still falls in the lines that, as far as I'm concerned, that they're not doing 12-step work. One alcoholic taking another alcoholic through the 12-step process or sponsorship. They're doing a job. But there is plenty of non-paying Alcoholics Anonymous jobs. And what it's saying here, that they derive no real authority for their titles, they do not govern. Right? Alcoholics Anonymous is backwards. A normal corporate structure is you got the guy at the top and all these people underneath him listening, you know, and they're all filtering instructions down to the bottom. Well, Alcoholics Anonymous is like the upside down triangle with all the membership at the top and the leaders at the bottom of the triangle trying to understand what does the membership want from us? Right? Which is completely baffling to probably a lot of people that study businesses, because we work the whole thing completely backwards. Right? But partly the way that has to work is that rotating leadership. If you thought about it, if someone came in and they were at in the upper tiers of Alcoholics Anonymous for decades, right? Then they could easily become something else. Right? The fact that these secretaries and the people that run our areas, the fact that those jobs rotate will better represent the current population and the current ideas of the area. One of the things that Bill knew is that the Alcoholics Anonymous of the 1940s or the 1950s was not necessarily what's going to work in the 1990s or the year 2000. And the Alcoholics Anonymous of now, 2008, may not work in 2015 or 2020. But as these situations have some rotation to them, it's going to reflect different ideas and different consciousnesses of the current people that are in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And again, it leads us to, I think, a stronger possibility of longevity for Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole. Tradition 10. Oh, so the checklist. Is there a governing individual or exclusive group authority that dictates organization to a group? Okay. That's the checklist question. The way that I would relate that personally, though, in my group, is we had a group figure, right? Someone who attracted a lot of other people to our group. That he was good about not trying to grab the pedestal, but people kept shoving him towards the pedestal. What had happened, though, was he had good sponsorship, so I think that ultimately we survived him. Because when he left, what first happened was all the people that were there just for him, because he was there, stopped coming. So the meeting went from 80-some-odd people to 10. Could no longer afford the rent. Everybody was like walking around kind of lost because the whole situation had changed. And it was because this person had become a group leader. Not by choice, but just because the people that were there, because he was there, put him there. And you see that around Alcoholics Anonymous. There was Bob A. around Los Angeles, who had a lot of meetings. They had meetings every day, and Bob was the main speaker at each of those meetings every day. Well, Bob said all the right things. He pointed everybody to God. He was a great speaker, and he was very charismatic. And he had a great following. You know, his there was hundreds of people that attended his meetings regularly, every probably most of them every day. And but what happened was Bob got cancer. Bob passed away. And in effect, all those meetings, it was some of them, I think it was more than one a day on some days, wasn't there? Yeah. And in effect, God died. The thing that they worshiped the most died. And all those meetings closed down. Right? And all they were left with was this one meeting that became a memorial for Bob. Right? And I remember I actually had a friend that I started going to this meeting with, and I remember telling her, I said, you know, this meeting's going to complete, this is going to be the end of all of his meetings if this Bob Memorial doesn't stop. Right? And
Friday night,
yeah. And I heard that it did, that they've found their own foothold, but it's, I think it's only one meeting. Do they have any others? Just the one? Yeah.
Monday.
Yeah. And, you know, not making anybody a leader of Alcoholics Anonymous.
What about Clancy?
Clancy? What do you want to talk about Clancy? No? You know, Clancy does a lot for a lot of people. People really, really think well of him. His group is enormous. Right? But whose yard are they going to go to when Clancy's not there? You know, who's going to... You know, certainly, luckily, there's been other strong people that have come up in the group. Whether it stays together as a group is yet to be seen, but the potential for it to fall apart is there, which is what Alcoholics Anonymous is trying to avoid, is avoiding the things that create potential for Alcoholics Anonymous's destruction. And putting somebody up as the king of the group, right? And it's sort of like with a bee swarm. If the queen dies, the swarm dies, right? So rotating leadership and not putting anybody on a pedestal and allowing and encouraging people to turn to the group conscience and God as seen through the group. Right? That's the thing that Alcoholics Anonymous is stressing.
What's the rule of thumb on secretary position for leadership?
Rule of thumb?
6 months, 2 years?
I don't think there is one.
Okay.
I haven't heard one.
Secretary of meeting for 8 years if they wanted to?
No.
Group conscience.
Group conscience.
So that's what I'm saying.
8 years to me sounds like a long time.
That's what's going on in the group that I go to. The person's been secretary for 8 years now, 10 years now, and I'm just curious. I never knew if there was actually a guideline to that, or...
I don't think... I have never heard of a guideline for it. Again, a group can vote that's what they want to do. The group can vote that person could be the king of the group. They could do whatever they really kind of want in that respect. That they could, I wouldn't say that it goes along with AA's suggestions, because where is rotation of that commitment, right? And you have to understand again the reasoning for it is the his eight-year commitment displays a dependence on it. You know, it illustrates a dependence on the person on a job. That, you know, if you ask me, the coffee person is the most important commitment in the room. You know, if the secretary doesn't show up, somebody else could read the format. You know, if the speaker doesn't show up, somebody else from the group can get up and talk. But if the coffee person doesn't show up, everybody's going to be pissed off. And nobody could stand up and cover that on the fly. So the checklist question is there a governing individual or exclusive group authority that dictates organization to our group? Right? That's one of the considerations I've got written down here. Right. So tradition 10. No AA group, I'm going to do the short form first. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. The long form is no AA group or member should ever, in such a way as to implicate AA, express an opinion on outside controversial issues, particularly those of politics, alcohol reform, or sectarian religion. The Alcoholics Anonymous groups oppose no one concerning such matters. They can express no views whatever. So, again, they learned from the Washingtonians and the Oxford group the how detrimental leaning towards political views, right? And also taking a stand on things like alcohol reform. You hear it all through Alcoholics Anonymous, a lot of opinions on alcoholics opinions on other alcoholic remedies, like, you know, therapists, you know. There's a lot of groups that will really put down therapy, right, as useless. You heard that, right? But even in our own big book, it talks about how helpful they could be, right? Because face it, you want the professional doctors and therapists to pull out the people they can help and leave us with the ones they can't, right? So I have to acknowledge their benefit to us and understand that a lot of them can't be as helpful as they could be because we're not helping them be as helpful as they could be, right? You know, because what about, you know, some professional public information as far as, you know, how we could be helpful to them, right? But instead, what you hear is the kind of rigid stands that people in Alcoholics Anonymous can take that actually separate us from those people, right? And obviously, if you're poo-pooing them, they're not going to have a good, you know, good things to say about you, right? But again, it's taking, if you take a stand against something, there's going to be repercussions. If you take a stand against religion, right, for or against, if like this meeting I mentioned before, that where they pushed the Bible in their meeting, right? There's nothing wrong with that. I have no judgments against that, right? But if, you know, but certainly if it got out that Alcoholics Anonymous uses the Bible, then, and that's what they, that's like an approved literature, right? Alcoholics Anonymous stand, if you call them up and say, you know, what do you think about the Bible? What are they going to tell you? We have no opinion. Right? You could use it if you want, or not if you don't want. They have no opinion. So now the people that don't like people that use the Bible have no argument with Alcoholics Anonymous, and the people that want to use, that think it's important to use it, can't have a problem with Alcoholics Anonymous because Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't have an opinion. Use it if you want, don't use it if you don't want. It's up to you. Same thing with the political ideas or the medical ideas. If a therapist said, hey, somebody I sent to an AA meeting and they came back and said, you know, those people in AA hate therapists. So the therapist got upset. I sent him to you to call up Alcoholics Anonymous. He says, hey, you know, I don't appreciate you guys talking bad about what we do. You know, what do you have against us? What do you think Alcoholics Anonymous is going to say? We have no opinion against you. Right? So that stand of non-judgment, that stand of being in a place of neutrality, you know, keeps Alcoholics Anonymous in a place that makes it more attractive for more people. And it doesn't separate us and put us into situations which could affect us negatively. Again, you know, causing situations that would darken the name of Alcoholics Anonymous. So the consideration here in the checklist is, does our group do anything that publicly states an opinion or takes sides on any issues or controversy that are outside of AA? Right. I guess the thing that is talked most about with this particular thing is, you know, using my last name in public. And that gets twisted into another direction, too. It's like, you know, I'm not allowed to use my... even. There's people who think they're not allowed to use their last name in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? Which is not what it's saying here, right? What they're saying is that I don't have a right to stand up as a representative of Alcoholics Anonymous in public and say, Alcoholics Anonymous believes this, right? It doesn't say that they're not saying here that I can't be written about in a newspaper or filmed on the television. But there are certain guidelines that they prefer us to stick to. If I'm going to say I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, they prefer me not to use my last name because I am not a representative of theirs. All I'm doing is representing my own experience. If I'm talking openly about myself, and it's in a situation that that people know who I am, my first name, my last name, and my identity, like you'll see this with movie stars or sports figures that have been coached on on the correct way to approach this. You'll see that they'll talk about being in a program for their problem, or they may even say a 12-step program, but they're not specifically saying which program. They're not saying Alcoholics Anonymous. They're just saying they're in a recovery program. Right? So here is somebody that everybody may know who it is, but now they're not connecting to Alcoholics Anonymous. Then on the other example was somebody that they don't know who they are, right? And they're mentioning Alcoholics Anonymous, but they're not mentioning any names. So again, it's about not standing up as a representative for Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole, right? Just standing up for my own experience and my own, you know, what happened to me. I can talk openly about that I have a 12-step program, right? A process that saved me from a situation that I couldn't get out of on my own. And I could even mention Alcoholics Anonymous as long as my name and image isn't attached to it. In that way, I cannot be associated as a representative of Alcoholics Anonymous. All right, so let's do 11. What time is it? 11, the short form is, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. I think I kind of mixed the two, didn't I? I kind of went over a 10 and bridged 11. Again, 10 was specifically about not having opinions, on outside issues specifically. And 11 is actually about the public relations policy and how we should talk, how we should be conversing with the press, right? So let's just go to the checklist question, which is, at the general public level, does the group publicize any individual AA member's name or picture as a self-appointed representative of Alcoholics Anonymous? I am not AA, I'm just a member. Right? So I cannot represent AA as a whole under my name. It's not Dan S. or Dan Sherman and Alcoholics Anonymous. So, which takes us to the 12th tradition. And anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personality. Anonymity here it's not saying I don't say my last name. Anonymity here is is being the spiritual foundation of all our traditions is the acknowledgement that I'm just one person, one member in Alcoholics Anonymous. And through all these traditions, the idea of placing the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous before my own personality is a spiritual action. Right? Obviously, if I can't do it, it's going to look not spiritual, right? If I'm going against, you know, if I'm the one in the first tradition where I'm trying to make the meeting about me, right? Or in the second tradition where I'm trying to steer the group and I don't care what the group has to say. If this is about me and my personality, what I want here, right, then it's about personalities before principles. Right? And I put myself above Alcoholics Anonymous. The idea here is that what I'm trying to practice here is surrendering to the consciousness of God as seen through the group in all these different directions. And I, for a couple reasons. One is certainly because I love Alcoholics Anonymous, but ultimately, and also I want Alcoholics Anonymous to survive, so I have a place to go. You know, but I also realize that Alcoholics Anonymous is about whether or not I drink again, right? Because it's my spiritual path and the path that I've chosen to walk with God through. Right? If Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't survive, then where would I go? Right? Certainly, I would have to go to God, but you know, and maybe there would be a church, or maybe there's something. But ultimately, Alcoholics Anonymous has proven to be the most effective place for me to be, right? Both as activity for my chosen spiritual path, right, and as the results that I've seen around me. Right? I see people's lives change constantly, and for them not to have a place like this to go, right, you know, and the reality is those, like the Washingtonians, disappeared. The Oxford group hasn't disappeared, but it's not what it was, right? And there's probably been plenty other movements that have tried to help people, right? But nothing has been more effective than Alcoholics Anonymous. Right? So I want to thank you for sitting through all this. If I might have a few, if you don't have one of these, I think there might be a few more laying around. And if you want to get one later, you can get it from the website, thejwalker.com. Thank you. Thank you.